قالتها أن بدعا أن بدعا بتا زمرو تاس تشتا تشتا تيجا بروبيت أتينا شودي تو هنتم Pritu putra maharataha Anvadan vata sangrodhas Tishta tishte ticha bravit Atrina By the great sage Atri Choditaha, being encouraged. Hantum, to kill. Prituputraha, the son of King Pritu. Maharataha, a great hero. Anvadavata, followed. Sankrudaha, being very angry. Tishta tishta. Just wait, just wait. Iti. Thus. Cha. Also. Abravit. He said. Translation. When the son of King Pritu was informed by Atri of King Indra's trick, he immediately became very angry and followed Indra to kill him, calling, "Wait, wait." Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The words tishta tishta are used by a kshatriya when he challenges his enemy. When fighting, a kshatriya cannot flee from the battlefield. However, when a kshatriya, out of cowardice, flees from the battlefield, showing his back to his enemy, he is challenged with the words, tishta, tishta. A real kshatriya does not kill his enemy from behind, nor does a real kshatriya turn his back on the battlefield. According to kshatriya principle and spirit, one either attains victory or dies on the battlefield. Although King Indra was very exalted, being the king of heaven, he became degraded due to his stealing the horse intended for sacrifice. Therefore he fled without observing the kshatriya principles. And the son of Pritu had to challenge him with the words, tishta, tishta. I think I'll read some additional verses, but I'll say a few things on this verse. In the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there's another situation where soldiers are fleeing from the battlefield against kshatriya principles. The situation is when Indra, it's a role reversal here, Indra has achieved the Narayan Kavacha mantras, and he's using the Narayan Kavacha mantras along with a a powerful weapon that Vishvakarma has given him from the bones of Dadichi in order to kill Vritrasura. And when Indra comes charging onto the battlefield, the demons are cut down so fiercely that they begin to flee. And Vritrasura severely chastises Indra. He says, very similar to what Prabhupada says here, that Kshatriya principle, these warriors shouldn't flee from the battle, nor should you fire arrows upon them from behind. What kind of Kshatriya principle are you observing? You're a great hero, and great heroes don't violate the principles, the codes of Kshatriya battle. Why are you degrading yourself like this? So, the son of Prithu Maharaj, Prithu didn't he was pointed out by Atri that the horse had been stolen. And when he spoke loudly, Prithu, here and in the next, because it happens twice, Prithu doesn't respond. But the son of Prithu, Prithuputra, he responds, and he becomes very angry that the horse intended for the sacrifice of my father was stolen by the King of Heaven. So, apparently with mystic power, because Indra is flying into the sky with the horse, the son of Prithu is pursuing him in equal speed and asking him to turn around so he could receive his arrows, because he doesn't want to shoot the arrows from behind. Tishta, tishta, wait, wait. Turn and fight. There's another situation like that in the Ramayana where get the name of the demon. The demon that's guarding Madhupuri. What's his name? That my memory is failing me. That Shatrughna went to fight. Huh? Lavanasura. Lavanasura. So Lavanasura had struck Shatrughna with a blow of his mace so hard that Shatrughna fell to the ground and Lavanasura thought he was dead. So he started going back into the palace. But Shatrughna came to external consciousness again and called, "Oh, coward, turn and fight. Why are you fleeing from the battle? You're just a coward. This just shows you're fleeing, a Kshatriya, fleeing from the battle." That enraged Lavanasura. And then the arrow of Vishnu that Ram had given to Shatrughna was fired and killed Lavanasura. So, one other another point, Prabhupada is saying in the purport, although King Indra was very exalted, being the king of heaven, he became degraded due to his stealing the horse intended for sacrifice. But the previous verses show how he became degraded, like, you know, cause and effect. And then that effect is another cause for further degradation, becomes an effect. That effect becomes a cause for further degradation. In this way, the deterioration of good qualities happens in a chain reaction way. It's not like at once the full degradation takes place, but everything starts, in this case, everything starts with envy. Everything starts with the deterioration of good qualities, these six enemies of the conditioned soul. They're not just like in themselves bad, but in themselves they are the cause of further degradation and further degradation and further degradation. Because of his because of his being envious of Prithu's opulences as a result of the horse sacrifices, he decided what he needed to do was to stop him from making that 100th sacrifice out of envy. And so he adopted unscrupulous means to do the stopping of the sacrifice. So he adopted a disguise and he stole. And now after stealing, he knows it's wrong to steal, so now he's fleeing from the situation where he stole. Now he's being challenged by the son of Prithu and he panics. We're going to hear what he does, but you know, degradation, degradation, all chain reaction of further degradation starting from envy. So there's like six or seven verses in a row that have no purport, so I'm going to read them slowly, sorry. And then there's a further purport. Text 14. King Indra was fraudulently dressed as a sannyasi, having knotted his hair on his head and smeared ashes all over his body. Upon seeing such dress, the son of King Prithu considered Indra a religious man and a pious sannyasi. Therefore, King Prithu did not release his arrows. When Atri Muni saw that the son of Prithu did not kill Indra, but returned deceived by him, Atri again instructed him to kill the heavenly king, because he thought that Indra had become the lowest of all demigods due to his impeding the execution of King Prithu's sacrifice. So his son went after him, saw was a sannyasi, and returned. And Atri told him, don't return, kill him. Don't just get the horse, kill Indra, lowest of beings. Look what he's done. Text 16. Being thus informed, the grandson of Vena immediately began to follow Indra, who was fleeing through the sky in great haste. He was very angry with him. Prithu's son was very angry with Indra, and he chased him just as the king of vultures chased Ravana. When Indra saw the son of Prithu was chasing him, he immediately abandoned his false dress and left the horse. Indeed, he disappeared from that very spot. And the great hero, the son of Prithu Maharaj, returned the horse to his father's sacrificial arena. My dear Vidura, when the great sages, this is Maitreya speaking to Vidura, when the great sages observed the wonderful prowess of the son of King Prithu, they all agreed to give him the name Vijitashva. Vijitashva means he who has won the horse. Vijitashva, son of Prithu. My dear Vidura, Indra, being the king of heaven and very powerful, immediately brought a dense darkness upon the sacrificial arena. Covering the whole scene in this way, he again took the horse, which was chained with golden shackles near the wooden instrument where animals were sacrificed. The great sage Atri again pointed out to the son of Prithu that Indra was fleeing through the sky. The great hero, the son of Prithu, chased him again. But when he saw that Indra was carrying in his hand a staff with a skull at the top, and was again wearing the dress of a sannyasi, he still chose not to kill him. But when the great sage Atri again gave the directions, son of Prithu became very angry and placed an arrow on his bow. Upon seeing this, King Indra immediately abandoned the false dress of a sannyasi and, giving up the horse, made himself invisible. Next, then the great hero, Vijitashva, the son of King Prithu, again took the horse and returned to his father's sacrificial arena. Since that time, certain men with a poor fund of knowledge have adopted the dress of a false sannyasi. It was King Indra who introduced this. And Srila Prabhupada's powerful purport. Get ready. Since time immemorial, the sannyas order has carried the tridanda. Later, Shankaracharya introduced the ekadandi sannyas. A tridandi sannyas is a Vaishnav sannyasi, and an ekadandi sannyas is a Mayavadi sannyasi. There are many other types of sannyasis who are not approved by Vedic rituals. A type of pseudo-sannyas was introduced by Indra when he tried to hide himself from the attack of Vijitashva, the son of King Prithu. Now, there are many different types of sannyasis. Some of them go naked. Some of them carry a skull and a trident, generally known as Kapalika. All of them were introduced under some meaningless circumstances, and those who have a poor fund of knowledge accept these false sannyasis and their pretenses, although they are not bona fide to guide spiritual advancement. at the present moment, some missionary institutions, he's not mentioning the name, but you can read between the lines, some missionary institutions, without referring to Vedic rituals, have introduced some sannyasis who engage in sinful activities. These sinful activities, forbidden by the Shastras, are illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, and gambling. These so-called sannyasis indulge in all these activities. They eat meat and flesh, fish, eggs, and just about everything. They sometimes drink with the excuse that without alcohol, fish, and meat, it is impossible to remain in the cold countries. These sannyasis introduced all these sinful activities in the name of serving the poor, and consequently, poor animals are cut to pieces and go into the bellies of these sannyasis. Prabhupada is not treading lightly here, he's strong. As described in the following verses, such sannyasis are pakhandis, or pashandis from the previous verse. At Vedic literatures state that a person who puts Lord Narayana on the level with Lord Shiva or Lord Brahma immediately becomes a pakhandi, as stated in the Puranas. Yastu Narayanam Devam Brahma Rudadi Daivatai Samatvenaiva Viksheta Sapashandi Bhaved Dhruvam. In Kali Yuga, the Pakhandis are very prominent. However, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has tried to kill all these Pakhandis by introducing the Sankirtan movement. Those who take advantage of this Sankirtan movement of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness will be able to save themselves from the influence of these pakhandis. End of purport. I apologize for my lack of vitality. I'm feeling fine, my voice is not the same. So, we'll keep the class short. Prabhupada is taking from this scene that's not a Kali Yuga scene, it's a previous Yuga, it's Satya Yuga, where this same procedure that happens, or to speak in Satya Yuga, rampantly in Kali Yuga, is going on. Only in this case, the person who is the pretender, renunciate, is the King of Heaven. And so Prabhupada remarks in the earlier purports, if this can happen to the King of Heaven, what to speak of ordinary people? So, from both the side of persons in general, and even more particularly from the side of those who would become sannyasis, the people in general should be very cautious about what are the standards that are being maintained by someone who may be wearing saffron dress and even carrying danda. What are the standards that one is keeping? And if one is not properly keeping standards, they're not to be accepted as a sannyasi. In this case, where Indra has adopted this program, he's succumbing to very low behavior. Stealing, disguising, fleeing, and cowardice, and using mystical tricks to accomplish simply checking his envious-spirited program. So, in this age of Kali, many other such non-genuine imitators or offenders have arisen. And it's not important to make a comprehensive list of those offenders, but it's certainly something that one should be very cautious about. Again, both from the side of people in general and those that might enter into the realm of taking up the renounced order of life. The duty of the renounced order of life is to be an example for people in general. But instead, it's used as a means for gaining something, gaining respect or gaining wealth or gaining followers or gaining women or gaining so many things. I'll just tell one Prabhupada story or two Prabhupada stories. Sometime around 1971, the winter of 1971, going into 1972, there was a sannyasi that spoke very highly of Srila Prabhupada, and you know, we were moved by how — this is in the Brooklyn Temple — and we're moved by how well he spoke of Srila Prabhupada. And so he was allowed to stay in the Brooklyn Temple through the winter, because he had just come from India, had no place to stay. And Santosh and Jai Sachinandana were working on Sanskrit translations, and this man knew Sanskrit, so they were studying Sanskrit with him during the day. So he was like a little Sanskrit teacher kind of thing. And in the morning, the Srimad Bhagavatam class, he would chant the verse, because Prabhupada had that practice that he would have Pradyumna lead the Sanskrit chanting, and then the devotees would chant responsibly and so on. So Santosh and Jai Sachinandana engaged this man in that way. And when the winter was over, he left. And then that summer — so it was the summer of 1972, summer of 1972, Prabhupada came to the temple, to the Brooklyn Temple. And he received this report that a sannyasi had been staying at the temple for the winter. And Prabhupada became enraged. "Why have you allowed this to happen?" I didn't hear it directly because I was Sankirtan leader. I was just busy doing other things. But the others who were the permission givers in the temple, Prabhupada was very heavy. And he said that you have poisoned all the devotees to hear this man chant Sanskrit. Because the argument was, he's not giving the verse and purport, he's just chanting the Sanskrit. And Prabhupada's position was, you poisoned all the devotees just to hear such a person chant Sanskrit, because he's in — without having ever met him, Prabhupada said he's, you know, hearing something about his life, he's in a personalist and a woman monger. you know, devotees are thinking, how does Prabhupada know what his personal life is? But sure enough, the sannyasi came back when Prabhupada was visiting. He was there for a week. He came back with two of his girlfriends that he had, you know, recently made friendship with after having left our temple. And one of the girlfriends and the sannyasi went into Prabhupada's quarters to meet with him. I don't know how he got past the guard, but he went in to meet Prabhupada. And I was out in the hall, and I heard some loud noises, like banging and slamming and shouting. And within about 15 seconds, there were four Prabhupada disciples, sannyasis, lifting this man up in the air with his legs and arms flailing, went down the hall, out the front door, and threw him onto the sidewalk. Because he had gone in and started offending Srila Prabhupada. And his girlfriend was following behind. You can't do this. You can't do this. He's a sannyasi. And Prabhupada then called the leaders to say, just see, I told you, in the dress of a sannyasi. So, you know, we're innocent. We're just respecting the sannyasi. With the new Sanskrit and helped us chant the verses. But Prabhupada didn't take these things lightly. I don't know what's going to happen as time passes and, you know, these important features of how Prabhupada carefully protected his movement and his disciples from these influences. Because as time goes by, this liberality is there that says, oh, what's the problem? He's chanting Sanskrit, or he's speaking about something, you know, Ramayana and Krishna. He's a sadhu. Prabhupada made very clear distinctions between types of sadhus. There's one other description. I can't remember the detail of it, but I read it once in Burijan's writings about Srila Prabhupada. When Mayavadi Sannyasi was invited to speak somewhere in Hong Kong, anyone here read that description? And Prabhupada was invited to also speak. So Burijan was very surprised Prabhupada agreed, because normally he would never agree to something like that, to being on stage with an impersonalist. So it was a group of people who liked him very much, and they also knew Prabhupada was in town in Hong Kong, and so they invited him to. And they had this big seat for their sannyasi and a little seat for Prabhupada. So Prabhupada got there first, and he went and sat right on the big seat. And they were saying, Swamiji, can you sit over there? The big seat is for our guru. And Prabhupada made like he didn't, you know, hear them, didn't understand them. He wouldn't move. And Burijan, it's very funny, very humorous. Prabhupada spoke, and then the sannyasi was speaking. And when the sannyasi was speaking, Prabhupada was like, you know, gritting his teeth and tapping his leg, and it was in Hindi, so Burijan couldn't understand. But as he went on, describing, at one point Prabhupada raised his fist and slammed his fist on his table and shouted, you know, because he was... And then spoke in Hindi something very, very loud, and got up and walked out. And Burijan asked Prabhupada what happened. And he was blaspheming Krishna. First it was just general mush, And then it was directly Das Vini Krishna. And Prabhupada said, I couldn't tolerate it. So he, out of an outburst, and left the assembly. Like this purport, Prabhupada didn't have a lot of patience with cheaters. And because particularly those in the renounced order of life, and for that matter also the brahmanas, and for that matter in general the Vaishnavas, they're to set an example for society. And if the example for society is cheaters, what's the rest of society going to do? If the best are cheaters, what can be expected of the rest of society? So it's obligatory for sannyasis to set a very high standard, and for brahmanas to set a very high standard. Not like, you know, to go around hammering people, but by their personal example, set a high standard. And as devotees of Krishna, by our character and by our activity, set a very high standard. Because otherwise, how are people going to understand what proper conduct is? And by that standard, that's powerful preaching. It gives people a role model how things that are described in the scriptures can actually happen in the world today. It's doable. It's not like something in the bygone ages people could actually be of quality. We're meant to exhibit that quality by the merciful process of devotional service that we've been given. So I'm going to end there. Conserve my voice for whatever. No, I can take some questions. This question came up yesterday a little bit, like, does this kind of behavior seem to go with the territory of being Indra? And my answer then was, the fruits of piety plus a heart that's impure equals pride. And when there's pride, it can destroy all good qualities. It's worth noting, it's not just those three examples, there's so many examples. But Lord Vishnu still protects Indra. He likes Indra. He isn't like, you know, you're a bum. He's a great personality. He just, like, becomes filled with himself at times. And, you know, I know a few people that are like that, that they're very qualified. They're very sincere, and, you know, sometimes they become very filled with themselves and they do hurtful things to other people. But they very quickly, some of them at least, very quickly can acknowledge they've made a big mistake. So Indra gets carried away because of pride, because his heart is not, so it's part of the territory. If he was this perfected soul, he would be in Vaikuntha. He's not a perfected soul. Extremely. He's not just in heaven, he's the king of heaven. He's powerful. On the strength of his pious merit, he becomes proud of that piety and that power that comes from his piety. We find people that are very something, very intelligent or very wealthy or, you know, very good something. And they're very proud. And that pride takes away all the merit. It just goes with the territory of being a pious person whose heart is not fully pure. It's very dangerous territory. If this wasn't being recorded, I would tell you a current story. Just put it on hold.